This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour three rolling along this morning. Again, the NBA tonight continuing its postseason. They got a big one out west as Golden State will host LeBron James and the Lakers. Also, before that, the Knicks at the Garden will try to even up their series with the Miami Heat as the Heat won Game 1 on Sunday. This is a 5-8 matchup in the Eastern Conference semifinals. But tonight, Golden State and the Lakers, and it brings back LeBron James and Steph Curry, who had those legendary finals battles when LeBron was in Cleveland and Golden State was emerging as the dynastic team that they are. How much of a rivalry is this? How much of a rivalry, when people think of LeBron and Steph, do they think of it as the rivalry of two players like Magic versus Bird? Or do they look at it as two good players who occasionally collide on very important series for the finals, now in the playoffs, in the Western Conference? How do we really look at it? We love rivalries. We always try to match up the best players to somebody else to create a rivalry, even if one doesn't exist. We will try to do it. We've been trying to do it with Patrick Mahomes, and we created one, I think, with Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. But correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've decided on which quarterback is the rival to Patrick Mahomes quite yet. But it might be Burrow, for, you know, but because he's the one that won in Kansas City. But we do that all the time. Brady, we could not get a real straight-up rivalry. We did it with Peyton Manning, right? But then, after, you know, after a while, we're like, that's great, but Brady had so much success. And while Manning certainly had his success, it was nowhere near the success. What makes good rivalries is that it works both ways, right? There is, you take from me and then I take from you. You take from me and I take from you. I would say, like, when teams try to force a rivalry with another team, if it's one-sided, it's no longer a rivalry. You have to be able to get over the other guy occasionally. And I think Manning Brady is a perfect example of that. While Brady won 7 Super Bowls in his career and 6 with the New England Patriots, there was a period of time where Peyton Manning was beating Brady in the postseason, both in Indianapolis and in Denver. And it wasn't so much that Brady was always winning. Towards the end, Denver was pulling out victories against the Patriots. So that in some ways worked, but in this case, does it work, right? Does when we think of LeBron James, do we think of him having a rivalry with Steph Curry? Or do we just think, you know what? LeBron James is in this era group with another guy that's winning titles, and there's younger guys that are going to win. Like, do we just say it's bundled? Or do we just force it? I'm interested to know that because I was hearing a conversation this morning about legacy. Is a legacy on the line in this series? Now, I don't mean, and I don't think they meant that it was a legacy like, do we look at LeBron differently if he loses this series? Do we look at Steph differently if he would lose the series? That's not it. That's not what the conversation. They were talking about more of the positive side of it. How does LeBron James, who's going to go down in history as one of the greatest NBA players, if not the greatest NBA player, depending on your metrics and depending on your generation, to be honest with you, what would winning this series do to that? Is it just another check mark, or is there something substantial about the way the Lakers season went this year, the way it ended the regular season where we sort of had, all right, now you're showing us something. A first round, you know, a trip in the play-in tournament first, and then a trip to Memphis for game one in a series that went 6 games against a defending champion in the conference semifinals. What would it mean? It'd be very difficult to put it in some level of context to a guy that's won 4 championships and on 3 different teams. And in however you want to view the bubble championship, he's a Laker champion, and that's a special place in the history of the NBA. It always has been. How do you put this series in some list of things LeBron James has already accomplished? I think to me, LeBron's legacy and his story outside of the basketball, the bigger picture to LeBron's story is going to be the early years in Cleveland, the decision, what didn't go right there, and why, and coming back to Cleveland and winning a title. And when I say what didn't go right in Miami, how do we look at a team that won two championships and appeared in four finals as, nah, how do we do that? We do that because they set the expectation that it was going to be seven.
Yeah.
That's how we do
or
it.
Or more.
Or more. We look at...
We just stopped counting.
And you know what? It was eye-opening because we hadn't really seen it before. Mm-hmm. We had always seen teams organically come together in greatness. Right? We didn't, you know... If you're talking Lakers of the 80s, for example, you're talking about Magic Johnson going on a team with Kareem that had got James Worthy and Michael Cooper and Kurt Rambis, playing a Celtics team that drafted Larry Bird and picked up Dennis Johnson from Phoenix and added Danny Ainge, whose baseball career with Toronto didn't work out, and then picking, you know, having Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale and adding this player and that player. That the organic creation. What we were thrown with LeBron was there was this effort on the players to put it together. It was like, oh, there's no GM behind this? There's no mastermind doing this? No, it was the players said, we want this, and we're going to tell our bosses how it's going to be. And they did. And that's how they worked it. You know, LeBron was like, hey, listen, I'm a free agent. I want to go here. Cleveland ended up in a sign and trade with Miami, so he signed with Cleveland and was traded to Miami. So Cleveland got a little bit something out of that. I mean, it's very complicated, but they worked it out. They got a pick. Yeah, exactly. So what ended up happening is this was the first time we saw the players sort of dictating this. We're like, in the Bulls, even the Bulls, like they got Scottie Pippen and they added Rodman and whatnot, but. That, again, is the Bulls as an organization going, hey, let's go get some guys and some pieces to this. When LeBron did that, the backlash was so bad that people went, I don't like this guy anymore. You could
have no, public won enemy me number
over.
One.
Like, you could have won me over. You're the chosen one, all of that stuff. But you earned it. Like, you were a great high school player that went right to the NBA and was successful right away. Right? We saw the greatness immediately. You didn't struggle. You didn't learn to find who you were. You were great from the start. You definitely own. You know, you're definitely the future of this league, and we can get behind this. Went to the finals in 2007, lost to San Antonio. Can't, you know, dragging, kicking, screaming a team that had nothing around it. But then going to Miami, we kind of looked at them as the villains. We knew they would win, but we didn't want them to win right away, and they didn't. So then when he went back to Cleveland and won the title, it was like, all right, there's a redemption here. He didn't publicly say, I'm sorry, but what he did was he said, I owe you one. You know, that was basically the message. I owe you one. I'm going back, and we're going to clean this up. I'm going to clean this up, and I'm going to win you something. So much so, and you and I have talked about this before, when he went to L.A., it was rather quiet. It was really silent. It wasn't a big fanfare. He's just like, oh, all right, I did my job. I got you a couple finals. I won a championship.
I mean, it was
I'm
a,
out.
What was it? It was a throwaway story on a Saturday afternoon.
Right. It was.
I don't even know
really
if I
quiet.
Got an alert on my phone. I'm sure I did, but that's how quiet
it
was.
He sent the letter about going to Cleveland to Sports Illustrated because he knew they would blow it up. So it was this big, we're going to Cleveland. But the move to L.A. was rather quiet. On the flip side of this, I don't think Steph Curry needs any more addition to a legacy. I don't. I think you win four rings. You did it all with one franchise. You did it when you had the slump, when people thought it was over, right? You know, you win one, you get Durant, you win two more. Then they went to the finals, but Durant was hurt, Klay Thompson was hurt. They lose to Toronto, and then they sort of disappear for a bit. Then they were hurt, and they didn't make the bubble, and then they were, you know. Then they won the championship again. Last year they won the championship again, and they were back on the mountaintop. And while the layoff was not long, like Tiger not winning a major, it was long enough in basketball world to go, wow, all right, they're back.
But at the same time, didn't we give him a free pass because, you know, Klay Thompson was out for, 2 years?
Yeah.
Steph
yeah,
Curry was
we gave
battling.
The dip, we gave the dip a break because they were hurt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Without question. And they lost Kevin Durant.
Yeah, and they lost Kevin Durant.
Yeah,
but
Kevin,
I think the loss of Kevin Durant meant no bubble, but I think it was really the injuries –
Yeah, but that's a factor. I mean, you have Kevin Durant, and you were winning two titles with him, and then you went to another one and lost, and everybody was hurt. Yeah, but Clay being out for a while, yeah, we gave him a break. But when they came back, we were reminded, oh, yeah, you know what? When this team's healthy, they're good. Like, forget, because Giannis won a title while they were on that little timeout. LeBron won the bubble title. Giannis won the next title, right? Like, there wasn't.
No,
there was
I remember
a sense
saying
like
that
the league was going somewhere else.
When they had didn't they have the number one overall pick, or were they were near the top?
Oh, they got James Wiseman. Yeah.
I mean, but we were sitting there, it was like, yeah, they're going to get the number one pick and all these players back.
Right. Exactly. One, they're going to get healthy and they're adding a great player in the. Yeah, right. And Wiseman is not on the team anymore.
I know.
Like, they shipped him to, I think, Detroit. But. For me, I don't think this series does any. I don't know. I don't know if it does any for any. I mean, for either one. I mean, aren't they pretty much secure in their legacy of what they've done? Is this series?
I almost feel like
are we elevating it to elevate it? Is that what it is?
Now, I don't know if this is a little bit of fandom coming in, but I almost feel like I'm trying to look at it from the outside looking in, and I feel like the Lakers need it more than the Warriors.
I agree with you there. I agree with you.
You know, almost to kind of establish. I mean, you know. I'll say, you know, winning in the bubble was hard, but everyone kind of, you know, will immediately say, bubble championship.
Yeah, it's bubble championship. When you watch the way these playoffs play out in normal time, the bubble is so different.
It is.
Right? It's just so different of what they went through. No crowds, same location, no travel. Very bizarre. Very bizarre. I'm glad they got it in, but it's definitely nothing like LeBron is going to walk, like what Curry did walking around in Sacramento. It's nice.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. We're going to talk Golden State basketball coming up at the bottom of the hour. We were just talking about the Lakers and Warriors tonight with Dieter Kurtbach of the Bay Area News Group. Did we talk to him before? You're like my memory bank.
Yeah.
Oh, we did?
Okay. Yeah, we talked to Dieter.
Was he good? Was he a good interview?
Yes, he is. Right. We talked to him.
Me last week.
No. I was thinking of the other guy that I reached out to, Connor Letourneau. We talked about the WCC.
That's
right. When was the last time we talked to Dieter?
Yeah.
To look it up.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad it wasn't yesterday or last week.
No,
it wasn't 2 weeks ago. So.
it's been a minute.
My memory bank.
Hey, actually, you know what?
Freezes up.
Now that I come to think of it, I don't think you have talked to him before.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because, you know, I always used him when I was producing later shows, I would use him.
Oh, I got you.
Because he's on the West Coast.
All right.
Unless he came east.
Yeah, because we did mornings for a long time. And,
yeah, early mornings. We're still doing mornings.
We're still doing mornings, but early
but,
mornings.
But, you know, we see more sunshine now than we used to.
We do. Exactly. So, we got two NBA games tonight. One NHL game wrapped up last night. New Jersey beat the Rangers in game 7, 4-0. That wraps that up, and they're going to play the Carolina Hurricanes in the next round in Raleigh. So the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs continuing tonight. Kentucky Derby coming up on Saturday. They had the draw yesterday. I like the Derby. It's one of my favorite events, but I don't know anything about horse racing.
I don't either.
You know what I mean?
All I know is that once we have a winner, that's the guy I'm looking at, or that's the horse I'm looking at. Against the guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to be rude. It could be
when I was early in my career and I moved to Vegas, I went to Las Vegas to work with the new Speedway. I was in motorsports coverage and they had a new track and I was helping. I got hired at a station to be part of the motorsports coverage that they were doing throughout the spring and summer. But I met a guy who had a horse racing show on our station. And he had a 1 hour show, and all it was him. He would come in and he had stringers all around the country at the major racetracks, Del Mar, Saratoga, Churchill Downs, like whatever. And all the races, all the runnings all the day. And he would just, these guys would call up and he wouldn't ask them questions. He wouldn't interview them. He would just set them up and like, we're going to go to Mike in Del Mar or Santa Anita. And he would just go, yeah, today, blah, 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 blah. This course is scratched. And they were using language I didn't know. It was all sorts of terminology. And he just ran through the thing. He just ran through the card for that day. And then he talked about whatever, you know, trifecta money was available, whatever, all that stuff. And then he would go on to somebody else. He'd go on to somebody else, go on to somebody else. And he did it for an hour. He just kind of talked about the whatever the day's betting was, whatever the races were. And that was it. And every day he'd come in and do that. And I finally got with him and I said, Ralph, can you, like, what is this? Like, what am I looking at here? And he was trying to teach me all the things like the buyer's speed number and, you know, just like how to read a racing form. So on a scale of 1 to 10, if you give me a racing form, I'm like at a 3, like a, maybe a 4. Like, I know what the numbers are, but I don't know what it means. Like, in the, like, I can't handicap a race based on it.
I agree. I could differentiate between the favorite and the long shot.
Yeah. You give me a one. I can go, all right, that guy. Yeah, that horse. Cause they'll give you where the horse has finished over the last few races.
Yeah, or split times.
Split times and all of that.
Yeah, I get all that, but I couldn't tell you. Cause I mean, this is why I would be a terrible handicapper, because I would sit there and like say, well, this team has a good chance of winning. But any given Sunday, you know what I mean?
Right, that's what I do. So, yeah, so if you go here, here's 15 horses in the Kentucky Derby. Tell me who you think is the top three. I'd be like, give me randomly pick.
Like, the White Sox are a terrible baseball team. And I read somewhere, I can't remember, and it just cracked me up. It was like, it was really, I had a hard time believing this, that the last time the White Sox had a two-game winning streak, Bryce Harper got hurt, rehabbed, and is coming back.
From Tommy John surgery.
From Tommy John surgery. Before they have another two-game winning streak or something. I mean, something ridiculous like that. And I'm sitting there, like, if you ask me, like, I don't even know who they're playing tonight, but I could probably find 5 different reasons why the White Sox should win today.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. No doubt.
Even though there's probably an easy bet.
Yeah. So, again, the Kentucky Derby coming up on Saturday. That's one event I've always wanted to go to. And not as a media guy. I wanted to go as a fan. I'll put up with the traffic and all the days of racing.
See, that's my problem.
The traffic?
The amount of people that are there. Because don't they overpack it?
It's an ocean of people. it's an ocean of people. It's crazy. It's insane.
Like, you go, you know, the week before, you could probably sit in a nice seat and just relax, stretch your legs out a little bit. Yeah. I feel like Kentucky Derby Saturday, it's, you know, there's like 150,000 people for a 25,000-seat arena.
I used to have this argument with my motorsports friends, like when we would cover motorsports, and they would say things like, hey, we had 140,000 people at Talladega. Let's see the NFL try to do that. I'm like, yeah, they're not playing in a on it. They're not, their playing surface isn't 2.5 miles round. Like, what,
you
like,
build it, they'll fill it.
Your entire premise is wrong. Your entire argument is wrong. Your playing surface is a 2.5 mile track where you can put seats all around it and sell tickets for, you can sell cheap tickets for $10 and people will come. A football stadium, it's 100,000 at the most, and that's terrible. And that would be terrible seating if you had that in an NFL game. Like, your premise, same thing with the Kentucky Derby. It's like, it's still a racetrack that's a mile, whatever it is, you know, mile and a quarter. And you're shoving people in the infield and all around it. And it's like, of course you could get a ton of people. Indianapolis 500 is like 300,000 seats or something crazy, like the 200,000. Yes, it's a 2.5 mile track with grandstands all around it. So when you go to these events, it's unlike any crowd you've probably used to going to if you've gone to college football games or NFL games where the crowds are like 80, 90,000, 70,000, 80,000. Now you can multiply that in some of these one-time special events, and it can drive you nuts. My cousin goes to the Derby a lot, and he's told me, like, he goes from here to, it's a good couple hour drive. So you got to leave at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, to drive up there, because if I'm there, if I'm staying with friends in the Louisville area, we leave at like 4 a.m. to get, you know, just hang out, get in there and, you know, settle in, and then day of racing. So, but it is one of the premier events. 149 Kentucky Derbies. Forte is the favorite. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Tappet Trice. I'm going to say it that way. Tappet Trice is 5-1.
Tappet
Trice? Yeah, and then Derma Show
Me the Money.
Sotogaki is 10-1. See, I don't go for names like that. If I can't pronounce the horse's name, I move on. Like, I'm looking at some of these names and I'm like, you know what? Angel of Empire sounds like a cool name for a horse, doesn't it? Angel of Empire. How about Two Phils? That seems like a cool name. Raise Cain? Reincarnate? Why would you name a horse Reincarnate?
Because maybe it's Beck.
How is a horse named Sun Thunder 50-1 to the last horse on the
yeah,
board?
Yeah, that sounds like it should just,
win constantly. Sounds like a powerful horse. Who comes up? Does AI generate names for horses?
Maybe. I forgot. That's names? What I still got to bring that story up.
Yeah. What, AI coming up with names for horses?
No, I have an AI story that I was going to bring up yesterday, but I told you I was going to bring it up today, but I didn't bring it up today, so I'll bring it up tomorrow.
Lord Miles,
Hit
Rocket
Show.
Can, huh?
I'm looking at the Derby's names right now. Hit Show.
Yeah.
Some of these are boring. Verifying?
Yeah, exactly. I had a name for a horse that people said was really insensitive. They said that was awful.
Glue Factor?
It was funny, but it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't funny. I wanted to name. I said if I had a horse, I would name him Win Place or Glue.
Just sort of
remind the horse. But I wouldn't really do that to a horse if it didn't win. I would. But no,
you got to stud it out. What about Glue Factory?
Yeah, right. Yeah, why not that? Why not that? See, to me, naming a horse is kind of like naming your boat. You know, when you get a boat.
Yeah.
You just don't name it like after your kid or something. You know what I mean? Like or name it after your wife or whatever. Like you come up with some really cool name that has meaning to you, right? Practical Move? You name a horse Practical Move? How does it?
Well, that's what I said.
Are these
verifying.
Just assigned randomly? I mean, seriously.
Skinner?
Is it just like, yeah.
Skinner. Practical Move.
Skinner.
There's Skinner. Yeah. Disarm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. All right, we got Golden State on tap tonight against the Lakers, the Warriors, and their Game 7 win, and the legacy of Steph Curry continuing to grow. We'll talk Golden State coming up next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And as I mentioned, the two NBA games tonight, we got New York and Miami going off the Garden, and then the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors in San Francisco. The Warriors had a terrible road record this past season. They went 11-30 on the road, but they won two key games on the road in their opening series against Sacramento. And advancing with a Game 7 win in which Steph Curry scoring 50 points against a Lakers team that has been playing really good basketball. And the latter part of the season, when they finally got LeBron and Anthony Davis healthy, playing very good basketball. They eliminated a number 2 seed in Memphis, who they matched up really well against. But, you know, again, no Steven Adams for Memphis. And they felt like there was a continuity situation this season with Ja Morant. But nevertheless, the Lakers do advance, and they now face off against Golden State. It's another matchup between LeBron James and the Warriors. However you want to put it, it's either LeBron James and the Warriors or LeBron James versus Steph Curry. But they met in the play-in game in 2001. The Lakers won that contest. But, of course, we always remember how many times these two teams met in the NBA Finals back in, you know, the mid 2010s with the Cleveland Cavaliers winning in 2016, down 3-1. But as we were talking about legacy, and I said, listen, I know we want to make these things bigger than they actually are, but I don't think that it's not a defining thing. I just want to make that clear that when people are talking about what this series means to these two guys, it's more adding on rather than taking away. I don't think either one of these guys loses anything by losing out on this series. I think it's just adding on. And if you go to LeBron's case, I mean, look, what we'll do with players who have won titles and they've got some sort of legacy secure is we're very curious about what they do under other circumstances. We did this in the NFL with Tom Brady, right? Where Tom Brady won 6 championships with the Patriots and gone to these Super Bowls and won some, lost some, but won more than he did. And then he left to go to Tampa Bay. And at that point, it wouldn't have been wrong to think that it would work out like other older players work out when they go to a new team. They just kind of, you know, just go away. You know, they play a couple seasons and they just sort of disappear. They're in a new uniform, but we'll never remember them in that uniform. You know, you can go through the list of players, right? Almost all the stars who have ever had this happen to them, we almost don't remember that they once wore a jersey of somebody else. You know, Bobby Orr once played for the Blackhawks. We always forget that. You know, it's Johnny Unitas played for the Chargers, right? I mean, you go down the list and you find these athletes who grab 1 or 2 more years. Well, LeBron James didn't go to Los Angeles to do that. Now, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl at Tampa, so it allows us this sort of remarkable, wow, we didn't see that one coming. Like, wow, here's another thing this guy did at the end of his career that wowed us even more. That's not necessarily what LeBron James was doing. He didn't go to L.A. to close out a career and just sort of play some basketball and get involved in films and have a secondary career. He went there because he knows in sort of the hierarchy of this league, there are just franchises where winning a championship matters a lot more. And winning championships in Los Angeles for the Lakers is different. Now, again, don't get me wrong. If you give some franchises that have never won one their first ever title, yeah, that's going to be special. But we know that in New York, it's going to be different. In Boston, it's going to be different. In Los Angeles, it's going to be different. And he recognized that and went there to win championships. That's why he brought Anthony Davis over with him. That's why they were willing to try out the Russell Westbrook situation that ultimately did not work out. That's why they were willing to try it, because that was the end goal. So to me, it's looking at LeBron in a way that is saying, can you do something later in your career that is sort of special, sort of, you know, a little unique? He already won a championship, but we were talking about earlier, you don't take that away. No one's taking that away from the Lakers. They won that bubble tournament, but it's not this. It's not what we're seeing and have seen since they got out of the Disney World bubble. That thing was so unique and so controlled. They were piping in crowd noise. There's no other way. Imagine describing that to somebody not born today. Like, imagine describing that to a young person and saying, yeah, there was one time we had this pandemic and the NBA sent all its teams to Disney World, but they couldn't leave the hotel and they had to be checked constantly and they played in front of nobody and piped in noise. And if they were the home team, they got some of the music that they are used to from their arena. And they just played this like every other day and they just had a championship. Because when you see the way it plays out normally, you see the real ups and downs of what a playoff series is. It's not every other day. It is a couple of days. You're talking injuries that may or may not have a chance to heal based on time. And in Steph Curry's case, let's go to the Warriors for a second. You know, that legacy for them is sealed in as a dynasty team. You know, yeah, they had an injury blip, as we talked about earlier. They didn't make the bubble. They had Klay Thompson out for a while. They just had a period of time from the title series against Toronto, in which they lost, until the time in Boston, you know, the series against Boston. They just sort of disappeared off the radar for a bit. But if Curry can take it, this team, for example, and again, I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, because that Denver Phoenix series, whoever does come out of that is going to be very, very, very formidable. If it's Denver, they're the number one seed anyway. If it's Phoenix, that means they really battled back and won that series against the Nuggets, and they'll be ready for whoever comes in the Western Conference Finals. But in this case, if Curry takes a team that had, you know, pretty mediocre regular season and turns it on and becomes this team in the playoffs that now know exactly who they are, that's going to add on and build up. It's funny. This league is so defined by its era, and it's so divided by its generation. And most sports are. Don't get me wrong. Most sports are. But the NBA really takes it to another place. Because if you were familiar with certain levels of basketball and certain way the games were played, right, Steph Curry comes along and kind of changes that. But Ron and I were having this conversation off the air. If you transported Curry to other eras of the NBA, would he work out? Well, the game was bigger. You know, there was a more emphasis on size than small guards. But could Curry create if you took the exact same shooting skill and found a way to put that in the defensive, physical-minded 90s, or even in the big man-dominated 80s, would he find a role? You kind of think he would.
I think he would.
You'd kind of think he would.
I mean, the way he did it was, you know, long shots. I mean, you know, I mean, we marvel at the 40, 50 footers that he takes. I mean, that's not routine, but it is the 20 to 25 footer range that, you know, back, especially in the 80s, they wouldn't have guarded that.
Right.
They would have let you shoot that all day.
All day. And he might have found the right coach in the 80s that saw that and said, well, I'll create the game around that too. Like, yeah. I'll add that to the game. I mean, it's an interesting, again, conversation, hypothetical conversation. But I don't think that you limit players based on different eras and times. I've said this many times about LeBron James. I think the biggest knock on LeBron is people say he's too soft, he wouldn't survive. Yeah, I think a lot of what LeBron James does is because the NBA allows it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of what LeBron James does to try to get away with it is because he knows that when he does it, he gets what he's looking for. If you put him in a more physical, if he grew up in a different time, I think he would have made his body to be able to play physical basketball. I think he would have said, look, if I'm going to play in the NBA, it's bump and bruise all night long. I'm going up against the bad boy Pistons who love to punch you in the face while you're driving the lane. Like, I can adapt to that style. I think it's unfair to say a player wouldn't work in another era unless you gave them all the tools and knowledge of what that era was. I think it's an unfair knock because you're not putting them in the environment where they know what they're getting into as they grow up, right? Look, to make the same argument in golf, let's take the same argument. Tiger Woods, when he came on the tour, he hit the ball such a way and scored in such a way that other golfers said, okay, that's the level. The level wasn't that. I didn't have to shoot 9, 10 under par to U.S. Open for crying out loud. But now I have to. Like, if I'm going to compete with this guy, I'm going to have to get stronger. I'm going to have to go to the gym. I'm going to have to hit my irons better. I'm going to have to learn to score better. That's the new standard. Sometimes an athlete creates the new standard, but it doesn't mean that the golfers, like in Tiger's case, the golfers before him couldn't do that. They just didn't have to do that. It's the same thing in the NBA. If you want to take a player and say, oh, that wouldn't have worked in the 80s. Okay, I would agree if you teleported them from this point to that point, maybe they would go, holy cows. But imagine a little kid growing up in the late 70s into the 80s and knowing what the basketball was. That becomes completely different. Now you've allowed that individual with that skill to develop that skill, knowing what the expectation was to get to where they want to be, which was the NBA at that form. So these two guys are adding on to something in this series, but not subtracting anything from this series. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Member Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, talking about Golden State as they take on the Lakers tonight in Game 1. Dieter Kurtenbach joins us, Bay Area News Group, on a Progressive guest line. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. How are you, Dieter?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Thank you for joining us. All right, before we get to the playoffs, let's talk about the regular season. What didn't go right for them? What was the big concern coming into the postseason for this team that was just a little over 500?
Yeah, what didn't go right for them was pretty much everything. They were they were kind of a joke. They could never put together consistent performances. They couldn't win on the road. It did feel as if, hey, this might all be coming to an end, and that was the concern going into the playoffs that would carry forward. And then they lost the first two games on the road, and it felt very, very logical that that's what happened. The Sacramento Kings were a damn good basketball team. They came out and they put the Warriors in positions they didn't want to be in. And if the Warriors hadn't won Game 5 on the road, we'd be talking about a very different series here in the second round. But ultimately, I think the Dubs' experience, having been in so many playoff series, having been in every situation possible, including Game 7s on the road in the past, it's shown through, and it might have taken a while, right? Much like them making the playoffs, it took all 82 games. It might have taken up until maybe even Game 7, fourth quarter, for them to really show that playoff experience. But I do think that was the deciding factor in a very close series. But now you get the Lakers, and I'm just not sure that that matchup should scare the Warriors as much as the Kings did, as counterintuitive as that seems.
There was a moment where the backs were against the wall and they had to go to, they have to go back to Sacramento, and Steph Curry stepped up. I mean, from a standpoint of this team, they don't look like a team that has faced that a lot. So how did you view the way they reacted to that Game 7 in a first round series?
They didn't react very well. Steph Curry reacted incredible.
Right.
And that was the difference. I mean, Sacramento gave them an opening. Sacramento shot terribly in that game. You could tell that the nerves were there. I mean, it wasn't even that they were just missing shots. They were clanking them. I mean, they were brutal coming out of the hand. And it's that tiny margin, right, of the ball coming off the finger in just that way that can make the difference in the game. There were a ton of missed free throws by both teams, including Steph Curry at one point missing two in a row, which is something you see pretty much every time there's a solar eclipse in the sky. It's a rarity for sure. But he put the team on his back. 6'2", 180 pounds maybe, put the team on his back. And that's what the great players are supposed to do. It hasn't had to happen all that often throughout Curry's Golden State tenure because the Golden State teams have been so good around him. But we saw it in last year's postseason, to be sure, especially in the NBA Finals. That atmosphere, the energy, the just everything about that series did not feel first round. That felt very much like the boss that the Warriors had to get through. Mike Brown knew every move that the Warriors were going to make. The way that the Kings set up was very challenging to a Warriors team that oftentimes has two non-shooters on the floor. Put Draymond Green in fits. You have Andrew Wiggins coming back from months away, having to go from 0 to 100. I think that wore on him. Klay Thompson having to go at 103 possessions per game clip. You can see him getting really tired in Game 7. But Steph Curry's playing his best basketball of his career right now. He's working on all three levels. He never gets tired, and he operates on a higher plane mentally than pretty much anybody else in the game. His ability to push away the nonsense and just operate. He was there, and he waited three quarters for his teammates to join him. They finally got around to it, and the Warriors won by 20 in a game that wasn't a 20-point game. It was Steph Curry beating the Sacramento Kings for 36 minutes and then everybody else hopping in for the fourth quarter of Game 7.
When the history books write this era, they'll talk Steph and Clay, but Draymond Green is going to be mentioned in there as well. But how does this team react when Draymond reacts like Draymond? People say they rally around it. They like the energy. What is the real truth behind how they react when Draymond does things that are outside just a basketball?
The rallying behind him is true, but it's probably overstated. I think that there's a general people are exacerbated by they're just exhausted sometimes by the Draymond Greenness of it all. At the same time, they know that there's a yin and a yang, and this team wouldn't have the same. They wouldn't have the same teeth, right? It'd be paper tigers if it didn't have Draymond Green out there yapping and doing Draymond Green things. And by the way, playing incredible defense when it really mattered most and reinventing his game in this postseason, or at least in that series against the Kings, where the Kings are playing four and five out. Draymond Green is not a player who should be playing the stretch four. He turned himself into a stretch four for the second half of that series. He knew it was a problem. He became a solution. That's what winners do. So they know that Draymond's value to the team is far. They know so much more about it. They know that it is absolutely underrated by anyone who's not with this team every day. So they're willing to take a couple of those hits because that's just the price you pay to get the Draymond Green who wins games.
How important is Kevon Looney to this team in terms of what he'll do defensively to Anthony Davis?
We'll see what he can do defensively to Anthony Davis. That's a tough matchup for Kevon because of Davis's athleticism.
Yeah.
If Davis wants to do it, Davis can win this series for the Lakers as the alpha, but he's never been the alpha in his entire career, and I don't trust him to stay healthy for an entire series. He's already injured this postseason, but Looney has been colossal. I mean, they should probably build the statue of him first just out of respect. I know it's Steph Curry and Clay and Draymond. Kevon Looney needs to be part of that conversation because there's no flash to his game. There's nothing that makes you go and want to buy a Kevon Looney jersey, but all he does is affect winning in a positive way. And what the Warriors said in that series is this is going to come down to a battle of possessions. And the Warriors turned the ball over at a crazy clip. That's the nature of their motion offense. So they had to find ways to get more possessions. And that meant either stealing the ball, blocking the ball, hard enough to do, or pulling down every rebound that was available, especially the offensive rebounds. Kevon Looney going for 10 offensive rebounds in Game 7. I know Steph Curry scored 50 points. Kevon Looney getting 10 offensive rebounds in that game should be 1A in terms of the most important things that happened.
In terms of the other things that might be a problem for the Lakers, let's go to the Warriors side of things. What are things that they're worried about on the Lakers side?
They're worried about LeBron James. I mean, as everyone should be. They can throw a couple of different bodies at him, but I don't think they have one LeBron James stopper. I think that perhaps the most advantageous thing they have going for them in this series is that LeBron James is going to have to play every other day. And so you can throw Draymond and Kuminga and Moses Moody and Andrew Wiggins at him and just mix it up. And he's going to be physically exhausted, you know that, but he might be mentally exhausted too, and that might be able to eke out that all-important win. They're worried about him for sure. I think that there should be concerns about Jared Vanderbilt and the nature of the Lakers bench. They come out and they give quality minutes when LeBron's off the floor. They're able to keep their head above water, and that's not something the Warriors bench has been able to do this season or this postseason to date. They really need either Klay Thompson or Jordan Poole, the Warriors do, to break through. And if they can't get one of those guys, if they get both, they're going to be in great shape. But if they can't get one of those guys to break through, I think that those Jared Vanderbilt bench minutes, D'Angelo Russell, I think those could be Dennis Schroeder. Those could be a real issue for Golden State. I don't think that the Lakers have the top end talent to compete with like the starting five of the Warriors. But man, they're deep. I mean, those guys 3 through 8, 9, they're pretty much all the same and they're all pretty darn good after the trade deadline. They did a nice job though down there in LA.
Is there a style of defense, and again, I know I'm talking about one of the greatest shooters in NBA history, but is there a style of defense that works for people defending Curry? Is Vanderbilt's long, it's athletic. Is that has that been problematic in the best way you could be problematic to Steph Curry?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea to throw Vanderbilt at him. I think that the one way that you can maybe slow him down is something we saw in the 2019 finals with Nick Nurse throwing every kind of junk that he could at Steph Curry.
Yeah.
But Mike Brown also did the same thing in this past series. There was a lot of box and one, a lot of 3-2 zone. They were just throwing any sort of thing that they could at Curry, just making him think more, right? Like just making him have to take a half beat and analyze in the moment. And then Curry went off for 50 in Game 7. At a certain point, as the series progresses, you don't have any more tricks that you can play, and it just has to be a situation where you say, we either double-team him or we don't. And if we double-team him, he's going to pass the ball to Draymond or Looney in the pocket, and someone's coming on the baseline to dunk the basketball. So we can give up 3 points to Steph Curry or 2 points to Gary Payton II or Andrew Wiggins. Like, that's the trade-off. Mike Brown admitted to it at the end of the series. Like, that's the trade-off that you have to make. And so you're hoping that Steph just doesn't shoot all that well. It's a really, really tough game for the Lakers. I don't envy them in this situation, but it should be a hell of a series.
Dieter, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Hope to catch up with you soon, my man. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good.
You got it. Dieter Kurtenbach, Bay Area News Group. So enjoy that tonight. Again, Knicks and Heat also tonight. And tomorrow we'll recap that. And again, looking ahead to the other games. And we'll thanks for joining us here on Wake Up Call. The Lombardi Line is next on Sports Map Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.